Thank you, Jack. No other questions?
Move on to the striped bass.
Move on to the striped bass.
This is an issue, though, in which we will ask, or are asking, for a public hearing next month. It's a little bit different than we normally proceed. We typically, you know, for items where we're asking for a public hearing last month, we tend to gloss over them pretty quickly, but because we're asking in this case for some very significant changes in how we manage the striped bass fishery, we thought you should probably hear a little bit more detail this month before you make a decision whether you want to go to public hearing or not. We have met with our special ad hoc striped bass management committee on a couple of occasions now. That was a request of the commission, I guess, dating back a year ago. So we did what you asked us to do. But a little bit of history, particularly for the benefit of the new commissioners. For more than 10 years now, the striped bass fishery has been managed by an ITQ, or an individual transferable quota program. All that means is that all of the fishermen who are permitted in that fishery own the right to harvest a share of the total quota of striped bass that Virginia has. What is unique about this striped bass ITQ here in Virginia is that typically with ITQs, fishermen own a percent share of the quota expressed in terms of weight or pounds. If an individual owns 5% of a million-pound quota fishery, then he's assigned a number of pounds equivalent to 5%. That's not the case with respect to the striped bass ITQ. The way we operate here is that the quota is expressed in terms of a number of tags, where one tag is placed on each fish. And fishermen are given a percent share of the quota of tags. And that system has generally worked well for a dozen years, but it's not without its flaws. And unfortunately, there are two flaws with the system, and they create huge problems that I think staff and the committee think need to be dealt with. The first problem is that once you hand a fisherman a number of tags and tell him when those tags are used up, he stops fishing. Because fishermen are paid by weight and not by number of fish, he places each tag on the largest possible striped bass he can find. And so over time, you can see it here on the chart, over time, the average size of striped bass that the fishermen have harvest each year has doubled. It's gone from 7 pounds to now over 14 pounds. Those fishermen who have access to large fish have benefited. Those fishermen like pound netters who tend to catch small fish, or those fishermen who are located up the rivers or up the bay who don't have access to those large fish are forced to put small fish on each tag, and because the number of tags has gone down each year that they receive because the average weight has increased, they're now getting a disproportionate share of the quota, even though they're entitled to the same percentage individual share throughout all of these years. The number of tags, as you can see, is over that period of time has dropped just about in half. So this has created a huge imbalance in the equity that the program was initially intended to provide. It has made winners and losers out of some of the fishermen, depending upon the type of gear they use to harvest the fish, or where they happen to reside, or whether they have the ability to migrate to the mouth of the bay where the large fish are found. And that is a problem we think needs to be addressed. The second big problem that the current system has created is a biological problem, and one that we are concerned that the other states, through the Atlantic States Marine Fishery Commission, will ultimately become aware of and express some big concern about, and that is this harvest of large fish that you can see here on the graph. When Virginia first argued back in the late 80s, early 90s, for its share of the coastwide striped bass quota, we argued that historically Virginia fishermen have always depended on the harvest of small fish, 18 to 28 inches, that those are the fish that don't migrate from the bay. They are resident stock and can withstand a higher degree of harvest than the larger, older fish that migrate from the bay. And the ASMFC agreed to that. They allowed Virginia and Maryland to create a model that predicts a safe level of harvest of small, non-migratory striped bass from the Chesapeake Bay on an annual basis. But because our tagging system forces fishermen, or at least allows fishermen to catch large fish, you can see in the graph here that just over this three-year period of time, now most of our harvest is very large fish. Remember, an 18 to 28-inch fish is less than 8 years old. So all of these fish, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13-plus, are fish that ASMFC ultimately is going to say you should not be harvesting, or not, at least not nearly in these levels. In fact, the next one shows the percentage of the harvest by age. And you can see that it's rather significant on these older fish. What ASMFC is going to say, particularly if we ever reach a point where the fishing mortality rate on the older fish is too high, is that Virginia needs to eliminate this harvest completely. And the way you eliminate it is to lower the quota. And that's the last thing we want to happen. In other words, we would no longer be allowed to use the model we now use that generates a quota based on harvest of the younger fish. They'll tell us we can't use that, and that will result in a significantly lower quota. So those are the two problems we're trying to solve. The question is, can we come up with a system that does solve those two problems? The theory is that we can solve those problems by moving away from a tag quota to a weight quota, where fishermen are assigned an individual pounds that they can harvest and provided with an unlimited number of tags, so that if they want to go out and catch all small fish, they run out of tags, we give them more tags. But once they hit that poundage level, they stop fishing. That eliminates the incentive to catch large fish. It eliminates the biological problem, and it solves the equity problem that I've described. It solves all of our problems, but it creates a new problem. And that is, how do you enforce 500 different individual quotas? My staff right now monitors about a half a dozen different species that are managed by quotas. You know, we have an overall quota on striped bass, and we have one on bluefish and flounder. Now multiply that by two orders of magnitude. We now have to monitor 500 different individual quotas. Well, it's not a problem for most people in the fishery, because every fisherman is required to provide us with daily harvest information and report it on a monthly basis. And every buyer of striped bass is required to maintain a database of their purchases and to report that to us. So we have two independent methods of recording harvest, one from the fisherman and one from the buyer. And we conduct monthly audits of those numbers, and it's very easy to determine if someone is cheating. by simply comparing the two numbers. And if they're cheating, we bring them here before you and you take care of them. Get their attention. The problem lies in people who are self-marketers, people who do not sell their catch to a registered buyer. These are people who sell their catch directly out of state. These are people who sell their catch to restaurants. These are people who sell their harvest to their friends or neighbors. In those cases, we don't have that second source of information to audit to make sure that we're getting the right numbers. So the question is, can we live with that situation? And I think we're approaching a point where we think we probably can, at least on a trial basis. The first thing we looked at were the number of self-marketers in the fishery, which this slide depicts. And you can see that there's not a huge number of fishermen who do self-market. When we showed this to the advisory committee, they said, well, you know, 80's still fairly high, but what percentage of the weight quota do they harvest? And so we did ultimately look at that. And here's what we found for 2005. With 1.5 million pound quota, only a couple hundred thousand pounds or less are taken by people who self-market. That's about 11% of the harvest is self-marketed. And, you know, that's better than 30, 40, 50%, obviously. Some may consider it still too high. But the good thing here is when we looked at it by category, the one we have the most concern about is this self-use. And that is, these are sales to neighbors and friends. That's very hard to track. But fortunately, it's an extremely small percentage of the catch. So it's probably something we can live with. Retail category is sales to restaurants, which if we work a little bit harder, we might be able to get some handle on. And the out-of-state, we might be a little optimistic on this, but we think through contacts with those states, and it's really, we're talking about Maryland here, and one or two buyers in Maryland. If we work with Maryland DNR, we might be able to get an auditable method of looking at least some of this out-of-state harvested. So, to again, provide us with that second source of auditing information. A little bit of other information that gave us some comfort. This is the overall issue. This just dramatizes how fishermen have been able to take advantage of the current system. There are 184 fishermen who are harvesting more pounds of striped bass than they are entitled to if we go to a weight quota. And that's because they're taking big fish. They're taking fish bigger than the average size. There are 218 who are actually taking less than what they would otherwise be entitled to. But this 184 fishermen are going to be the ones that you will hear from at your public hearing.
All 184 of them?
Probably. Probably. With our luck.
I won't say anything.
These are the people who are not going to like the weight quota, because in some cases, well, look at how the overages appear. There are 10 people out of that 184 who are taking as much as double what they're entitled to. Fortunately, most of them are taking no more than 25%. So, again, that number made us feel a little bit better. But let's keep going. If you look at the self-marketers, this is, a little bit better news. At least the self-marketers are not in this 75 to 100% category. There's only one. And most of them tend to be over-harvesting to a lesser degree. So, again, none of this is real happy news, but it's not the worst-case scenario either. This is the disturbing information. As you know, for the 2006 fishing season, we tried something different. We established a two-tag system in the bay and a two-tag system in the ocean, in which half of the tags given to each fisherman were required to be used on small fish between 18 and 28 inches, and then the other half could be used on any size fish. And we were hoping that that would drive the average size of the fish down, so the number of tags that the fishermen get next year would go up. Well, we don't think that's going to be the case. It appears that so far in 2006, what is happening is precisely what many people said would happen, and that is fishermen are using the required small fish tag on the largest possible fish in that category. The white columns are 2006 data, and you can see that, again, the small fish tag applies to fish from 18 to 28 inches, and you can see an increase in the larger fish. So what they're doing is they're targeting the larger fish within that slot and probably discarding everything in the lower part of the slot. Our fear is, this is in terms of percentage, I think the bottom graph, yeah, percentage. And so you can see that in 04, they were catching lots of small fish, and now there are these increasing percentages of the lower fish in that slot. Our fear is that the bycatch, the discards of all of these small fish, is now a more significant problem than what would occur if we went to the weight quota and a few people were violating it. We're probably killing more fish than we otherwise would with this other system we want to go to. And that, I think that too would be a concern for everyone, including the Atlantic States Commission. We're seeing the same thing on the larger fish too, an increase in these larger fish that are being harvested. This is data for the ocean. The problem is not as pronounced in the ocean with the two-tag system, but I think that's simply the result of availability of large fish as opposed to small fish. I mean, they cannot take anything less than 28 inches, and you know, the smaller fish are less abundant in the ocean. As staff started to explore going to a weight quota, we talked to our neighbors to the north who have a weight quota system, and we found it quite interesting that they are now considering going to a tagging system that Virginia has in place, while we are, in fact, considering going to something that resembles what they now have. So I don't know who's right in this, but I just make you aware that they've had a type of weight quota system in place up there for many years, and apparently there are some problems that you can see described here.
Just a question on that slide, Jack, before you go any further. The top bullet, not receiving daily reports in a consistent manner from all fishermen. You were talking about the mechanisms that would be in place for audit purposes to maintain track of the quota. And we're talking about monthly reports. We're talking about different, you know, duration reports. Is the data going to be timely enough for us to manage it in a manner that it should be managed? Because I can recall when I first came here, we had a heck of a problem getting the correct numbers as far as flounder were concerned that ultimately resulted on the guys on the dock every day managing every box of flounder that came off of every flounder boat to ensure that we didn't have problems like some of our other states did. Are we considering, or are we going to have in place a system that will allow us to monitor this on a timely enough basis that it's a credible system?
In terms of monitoring the overall statewide quota, yes. You may recall a couple years ago we put rules in place that now require buyers to call in on a daily basis toward the end of the season. So we are tracking that literally on a daily basis.
And it's working pretty well?
And it's working well. Also, keep in mind in this ITQ fishery, there are people who hold quota who never use it. And that factor alone has prevented us from exceeding the quota in some instances. It's sort of a buffer there that helps prevent us from going over the quota. Why they aren't using it, I don't know. But under an ITQ, that's your individual right. You can do what with your quota as you please.
The other concern I've got before we leave this slide is, and you and I have discussed it, law enforcement, the division, will be able to manage the tagging system as they have. As a matter of fact, if you go back to a single tagging system, which this would, I presume, simply just denote that the person has quota and they're transporting a caught fish, it will ultimately be easier for the law enforcement division. However, as far as monitoring and any types of problems and things like that, there's no mechanism in place that allows law enforcement to track potential problems. So your division, the fishery management division, it's going to be the onus, I would imagine, be upon them to make sure the numbers are going up. And last but not least, the ones that you were concerned about, the out-of-state ones on the other slide, you know, the penalties that we have here for violation of Virginia law and Virginia quota are nothing once you transport that fish across state lines.
That's right.
I mean, big time. So I just want to make sure that, and we aggressively pursue those because
absolutely,
from a time allocation perspective, that's a good case to pursue.
Right.
So anyway.
Right.
Jack, how do you address those four bullets that Merlin's having a problem with?
How do we address it?
Yeah.
Well, I can't explain all of the, you know, what Merlin is doing up there, you know, that has resulted in these problems. But we, you know, we require fishermen to provide us with daily records. They're audited against the buyer reports, and when people develop a track record of not reporting, we bring them before you and ask for action to be taken. And we're going to get into some penalty provisions here as well in a minute.
JT, I'm not sure. I'm not so sure that the way that they track their catch has a redundancy system and the ability for them to keep as close an eye on it as our people do. I think that might be a Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think another discrepancy or difference with Maryland, as I understand it, is that the dealers have control of the issuance of some of the tags. I think we're not going to do that. I mean, under the proposal, the VMRC would retain control over issuance of tags to fishermen, which would dissuade.
We would propose not issuing additional tags to a fisherman until all of his prior allotment are accounted for in his report.
Mr. Bell.
And I think one main problem Merlin has, they don't require the tags, unused tags to be turned in. So they can, that's the bottom one, number of fish landed and weight of fish reported. Because you have no way of verifying, because the tags are out there. I know people have bushel baskets full of
them.
Here are the recommendations that have come out of the committee, with the exception of the underlying elements. Staff has since, in the period of days since the last committee meeting, gone back and looked at this and is proposing some clarifications, which you'll see underlined. So those are not the direct recommendations of the committee, although I don't think they're significant enough to warrant getting the committee back together again. But the big issue are people who self-market their catch. And what we're proposing is that self-marketers be required to provide us with a receipt of who they sell to when they're self-marketing their catch. And in part, we're hoping that that begins to develop a database of where these self-marketing actions are occurring that will allow us to audit those people in the future, particularly if they're out-of-state people or if they're restaurants. If we see a restaurant cropping up that's buying a lot of striped bass, we can go to them and ask to audit their books for a comparison. Now, if a fisherman doesn't fill out a receipt, you know, you don't know whatever happened to those fish. But you do know how many tags you gave to that fisherman, and you can compare that to his reports, and, you know, you can monitor those things to see if there are some discrepancies. But these are the kinds of things that we would ask self-marketers to do to at least limit cheating, if you will. I think they're all pretty straightforward. These are other things that we will need to do to identify underreporting. We will track exactly how many tags every fisherman receives. Of course, they all have to be tagged, you know, before they're landed. We intend to not issue new tags until all previously issued tags are accounted for. I just mentioned that. And we will require the return of unused tags within 30 days of a person hitting his quota. Now, here we get into penalties. There's a lot of concern about fishermen exceeding their weight quota. And we showed this to the committee, and this is what they came up with. Rather severe penalties for people who significantly violate their weight quota. With some recognition that when you're on a boat, it's hard to weigh fish, or it's hard to estimate the weight of fish, although from most fishermen I hear, they're pretty darn good at it because they've been doing it all their lives. But that's where the 0 to 3% came from, that if you're within 0 to 3%, you're not going to be penalized. You will be issued a warning. It's 0 to 3% or less than 200 pounds, whichever is lower. So a person who has only 100 pounds of quota will be allowed to go over by 3 pounds because that's lower than 200 pounds. But a person who owns 5,000 pounds of quota would not be allowed to go over by 100. Well, he'd be allowed to go over by 150 pounds. It's still less than the 200. But as you get, you know, more discrepancies, you suffer severe penalties. This is not, we're not asking that this be a part of the regulation, but that the commission adopt provisions like these as a guideline, that when we encounter people who violated, you bring them in for an offense and you use this as advice in meeting out your punishment.
Jack, in that situation, the only concern I have from a legal perspective is that the when you bring in somebody before the commission, and an action that may result in the suspension of their license, that we have the best evidence available. So that will require the receipts, the catch records, and things like that that come off the scale. And
We agree. And we will be able to provide you with all of that that we have. Now, when staff looked at this after the meeting, we felt like it might be a little bit too lenient, quite frankly, particularly for people who consistently are over their quota year after year, even if it's only over by 3%. And I'm going to show you another slide that will change the penalties in this area slightly. And this is obviously up for debate, and we'd like to get public comment on all this, but staff just felt like, you know, if you're a consistent violator, the penalties ought to increase over time to the point where we clearly will get your attention. And that, those are the differences there. The question then was asked, well, if you take someone's license or you're deducting quota, what happens to that? And it was, I think, a unanimous recommendation that that quota then simply be redistributed to everyone else in the fishery based on the percentages of the quota that they own. Quite simple math. There were some other recommendations that staff has come up with that we need to work on. For instance, penalties for those people who violate the law in other ways beyond just going over their quota. If we find people not reporting, things of that nature, and we'll work on those. But again, those wouldn't be parts of the regulation. They would be guidelines. In terms of tag transfer restrictions, we want to make sure that people are in good standing with the system before we allow them to transfer. We're going to have to insist that we have all of the updated information about how they've used their tags or not before we allow a transfer to occur. We don't want to be transferring minute amounts of quota, you know, like 10 pounds here, 20 pounds there, so we're proposing a 200-pound limit. And we're proposing that we do no transfers from December 1 to February 1. And that's simply a manpower situation where at the end of the year we're trying to get all the numbers to a point where we know where everyone stands, and we're preparing to distribute the tags for the next season. This last issue on tag transfers was one that got a fair amount of debate by the committee, but as you know, quota can be transferred on a temporary basis where the original holder is entitled to the quota the following year, and the person it's been temporarily transferred to only has use of it for that year. Well, the question was, if I temporarily transferred 1,000 pounds to Mr. Holland, he gets use of it for this year. What if he goes out and harvests 2,000 pounds instead of 1,000? Well, he doesn't even have a striped bass permit we can take away, because at the end of the year, it's gone. And our feeling is, under a temporary transfer, the person who holds the quota has to be accountable to some degree. And again, that's a guideline that we're recommending to you. We also run into cases where people lose their tags. We'd like to force them to start paying for that. It costs money to purchase these tags, and there's staff time that has to be devoted to that. And so we're recommending some. Again, this wouldn't be a part of the regulation, but part of the procedures that we follow. And that's it.
I think you ought to adopt that as part of the reg, Josh.
But our request is that we take this out the public hearing and come back at the November meeting and move forward.
Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just offer a comment. About a year ago, when we considered joining the two-tag system, the commission signaled support for moving in this direction. And I'd like to commend the committee and staff for doing all this work. I mean, I know this is a complex management proposal, and a lot of the devil is in the implementation details, and a lot of thought obviously went into this. But I'd just like to commend Ernie and his committee and staff for all their work on it.
I'd like to echo that. One thing I notice about what we do around here, it's never like, you know, just because we've done it for so many years, we just keep on doing it. We're always trying to be as innovative as we possibly can to benefit all involved, and those that are involved in that process ought to be commended, Ernie, and I appreciate that.
Yes, I'd like to make a comment.
Sure, absolutely.
The committee really is the one that deserve all the credit. It's the first thing in life that I've ever chaired, not just at the MRC, that everybody seemed to get along fine, everybody come up with good suggestions, and everything ended in consensus, which is highly unusual when you're dealing with fisheries issues. So I think the committee probably was the best committee I've ever served on, and I believe they've done a very good job. So I'd like to thank all the several members here today.
Thank you, Ernie. My thanks go to them as well. Jack has asked that we advertise the outline of what he's provided for public hearing next month. One thing, Kelly?
And this goes to a point.
Kelly Place, for the record.
Oh, Kelly Place, commercial fisherman. I was sat on the striped bass panel as Kenneth Wayne Williams proxy. One thing that came up at the Striped Bass Management Board meeting on, I think, the 24th in North Carolina was Howard King from Maryland. As people were discussing how to reduce discards and wasted discard mortality up and down the coast, he pointed out that at some point we needed to incentivize the states to create ways to reduce waste, because right now there has been no incentive. In fact, with the two-tag system we just got through this year, much as a lot of us had predicted, there was the incentive to high grade and the incentive to waste. So one of the good things about this proposal is obviously trying to reduce that incentive to cull fish to a higher slot. But my point here is that if we adopt this type of system, very much like with the two-tag system we're finishing this year, the state will not catch its quota that it's been allocated in a conservation risk-averse manner, and that's a significant amount of money that, you know, a lot of people do depend on. So my point is that because this program that's proposed, even though we may alter it, is intended, among many things besides increasing equity, it's intended to reduce discards and reduce waste. I think that something that I've been looking at for 10 years, that if we can convert these wasted discards to landings, I think that we should follow the gentleman from Maryland's comment the other day and see if we can get credit for having reduce these discards. For example, say we reduce the waste of 300,000 pounds of fish that occurred through discards. Perhaps we could ask to be incentivized 2/3 of that amount, convert those wasted discards into landings, and then we would have achieved for the striped bass management plan a 33% conservation benefit or dividend. So I just bring that up now, since you're getting ready to go out to public hearing. I'm pretty sure Jack remembers when Howard King suggested that. So it may be that for the first time in 10 years since we've been suggesting this to reduce waste and turn it into a benefit, both conservation and to the fishermen, that maybe we could ask the ASMFC Management Board if our new program, which is intended to do exactly what they've directed the last 2 years, reduce discards, if we're successful in that, we would like to maybe convert some of that savings into a benefit for the fishermen and let the other part of it be a conservation dividend, and everyone would win. So I just want to bring up that possible concept to explore during the public hearing.
Thank you, Kelly.
Okay.
You've heard Jack's request for a public hearing. Matters before the commission for action.
Move to approve for public hearing.
Motion made by Mr. Bowden. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Schick. Further discussion. Jack, the only thing I've got on it, Jack, the certain things that you said would be policy. We're starting to charge somebody $25 an additional tag. I think it should be in regulation. We can carve out of the regulation what we deem to be inappropriate, but I think it would be carry more weight if it's passed by this body as a regulation, if it's compelling them to provide a fee.
And we will certainly advertise everything you saw today.
As a regulation.
If not as a regulation, it'll at least be there for them.
Okay. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Chair votes aye. Go to public hearing. Jack, you had an addition to the agenda?
Yeah,
Rob? This deals with the...